Welcome back to EV News Daily. Coming up today, an updated IONIQ 5. Nissan dumps older app users and 500 kilowatts DC fast chargers for New York. Plus, stay tuned because later in the show, I'll tell you what the big South Korean battery makers are saying over the weekend about their fight back against the Chinese battery makers. Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you're listening around the world. Welcome to EV News Daily, your trusted source of EV information for Monday, 4th of March. My name is Martin Lee, and I go through every EV story. So you don't have to. Remember, Patreon supporters get the episodes first, as soon as they're ready, and ad-free. Be like them and support the show by clicking on a link in the show notes. We'll start with some news today from Nissan. Leaf owners unhappy in the UK. Nissan announcing the discontinuation of the Nissan Connect EV app for Leaf and the ENV200 models as well, produced before 2016 because of the UK's 2G network shutting down. Well, it is shutting down, but not for a long time. It's going to affect around 3,000 older vehicles, losing the remote functionality, like remote heating, when it worked anyway, and the app will cease operation in less than a month. Emails have been sent out over the weekend, and maybe even Leaf owners waking up this morning to the email to say that from the 1st of April, your app won't work. Now, that is ahead of the phase-out of 2G technology, despite mobile operators maintaining 2G and 3G networks. Now, the best information I can find from the Ofcom website is that that's 2033. They have said that they will support 2G and 3G until. Owners today expressing their frustrations, highlighting the disparity between tech longevity between older and newer vehicle models. And that is frustrating, especially if you just bought a used Leaf thinking, well, I've got a bit of a bargain here. It does all the things that I want to do. I can preheat the car or the app and is going to work for a good long while. And it does, you know, highlight how much with electric vehicles, actually with all modern technology, how much of that decision-making process is out of your hands. Anyone that's ever used a Google product that finds themselves being told, yeah, we're not doing that anymore. You know what? I'll get to this topic at the very end of today's podcast when we'll talk about what's driving the Chinese EV boom, actually. And it is technology, but it has implications. Stick around to the end. Today, though, I can tell you about what Hyundai announced yesterday on Sunday, over the weekend, with the new extended range enhanced IONIQ 5. An updated IONIQ 5 featuring a new N-line sporty variant as well, alongside improvements to range, safety, design and technology. Battery capacity has been increased from 77.4 to 84 kilowatt hours. That matches the new IONIQ 5N, the hot hatch version. That promises bigger range beyond the current models, 321 miles on WLTP. That is 200 and late 200s, I think, on EPA. Either way, that could hit 300 miles EPA. Despite showcasing digital side mirrors in the South Korean version, a reminder, of course, to my American listeners that you don't get that. The vehicle's been updated to support comprehensive over-the-air updates across major electronic systems that enhances its connectivity and feature set, much like its competitor cars that it's up against. Now, some rather subtle exterior updates include some restyled front and rear bumpers, a bit of a sportier look, maybe a more of an SUV appearance, if you like. It extends the vehicle's length by about 2 centimetres. The rear spoiler has also been made longer by 5 centimetres, and the update introduces some new alloy wheels as well. Going inside, interior improvements feature a new steering wheel with some new interactive pixel lights carrying on that pixel theme from the IONIQ 5, and some additional buttons on the centre console for improved functionality. Now, never owned an IONIQ 5, did own a Kona for a year, and yes, the buttons for map and navigation always made me wonder, don't they do the same thing? That's now been integrated into a single button in the new IONIQ 5 because, yes, map and navigation, I could never work out the difference. I know there was a difference because when you'd push the buttons, it would show different things. But anyway, it's now a single button. Thank you, Hyundai. New safety features include some new advanced lane keeping assist, parking assist, all-round parking collision avoidance, and a remote folding function for the rear seats, adding some convenience. Hyundai reinforcing the IONIQ 5's body structure for better stability, agility, and reduced vibrations. Additional sound insulation around the rear axle and the electric motor enhances the refinement, they say. I don't mind a little bit of motor noise in an EV. I'm just super nerding out now. But I don't mind hearing the motor working. You don't want it to be too intrusive, but either way. Inside, the new N-Line version offers a unique interior, including some N-Line steering wheel materials and a new look, some metal pedals, a black headliner, sports seats with some N branding, N logo, and some red stitching, and a bit more of a sporty ambiance inside. So if you'd like to find out more, I'll pop a link in the show notes to the Hyundai press site that I found this at. Available to order this month, I think, in South Korea, but Europe, US, rest of the world, I don't know. We'll find out. What it does to the pricing, I don't know either. Okay, let's talk about BMW next and their new 5 Series Estate. God, I love the look of this car. And there's four drive options for this. So BMW covering all bases, petrol, diesel, plug-in hybrid. We worry about the fully electric version, of course, the i5. The i5 Estate is the fourth all-electric model to commence series production now at their facility in, I'll say, Dingolfing. My German's pretty terrible. Sorry if I've butchered that name for anyone listening where this factory is. And it's the fourth all-electric model to start series production at this facility in just 3 years. Now, this car will be really popular on German autobahns, in fact, across Europe, actually. We love our estate cars, and I'd love one of these in the driveway. So practical for anyone that doesn't want to hop on board the SUV train, which is me. But my wife likes big SUVs and sitting above traffic and things like that. Personally, I've had estate cars before. Absolutely brilliant. Love this form factor. The plant has been the exclusive manufacturer of the 5 Series Estate version since 1991, made 1.2 million units of it, and now it moves into the electric era. Love it. Link in the show notes if you'd like to find out more. Got some news coming in over the weekend via a press release. It was a Reuters report that I saw, and I just can't find out a ton more details. This is Gravity Mobility. They make charging solutions, hardware and software. They're backed by Google, and over the weekend they unveiled some fast charging, DC fast chargers in New York City, aimed at serving fleet operators, but I've also seen open to the public, so I can't find any clarity on that. I will ask them. There's 24 chargers going in that charge at 500 kilowatts each, according to this Reuters report. Now, I found an article from last year talking about the start of this project and the build-out. On the Gravity Mobility website, they talk a lot about their chargers being 500-amp chargers, which is great, but that's not 500 kilowatts. I just want to double-check that Reuters report is not erroneous, that they haven't confused amps and kilowatts. It does appear that these are for commercial vehicles, industrial vehicles, and can deliver 500 kilowatts to anything that could take that fast, because nothing in terms of passenger cars can take that in the US, of course. Gravity say that further funding rounds are anticipated this year. They'll aim to expand, and there's big interest in their high-speed charging network. ChargePoint, another EV manufacturer, for instance, also launching their Express Plus PowerLink 2000s recently. That is 500 kilowatts split between two cars charging simultaneously. But we'll dig into that and find out some more information. Sounds really exciting. Now, over the weekend, we saw pictures coming in of the Lotus Emeya getting closer to launch with the wrap-up of their winter testing. Battery capacity on this it's still juicy, but it's a bit less than the Electra. Now, the Electra is the big Lotus SUV, so I guess think of the Emeya. No, you say potato. I think it's going to be a bit less, but 102 kilowatt hours. That's still really decent compared to the Electra's 112 kilowatt hours. Those are gross figures, by the way, but offering similar range. So the Electra is 373 miles on WLTP, so we think the sedan will be something about the same. Of course, 800-volt architectures for these cars, and we think 350 kilowatt DC fast charging, four-wheel drive, of course. A high-end Emeya R variant will have almost 1,000 horsepower and outperform the Electra R. 0 to 60 time, less than 3 seconds, but Lotus have never really gone big on the 0 to 60. It's all about that. That power curve all the way through, way past 100 miles an hour. And, very aerodynamic design of these vehicles. The Emeya, which is the sort of, like I say, the saloon version of the SUV form factor, has more aero on it. So 215 kilograms of downforce at high speed, 160 miles an hour top speed. Just crazy specs. These Lotus, I can't wait to see more of these crazy Lotuses on the road. Winter testing concluding, which is minus 40 degrees Fahrenheit, testing that kind of stuff to make sure that wherever they're driven, they are going to be okay. Following their debut in China, it will be released then in Europe and then in the US. Link in the show notes if you'd like to see some pictures of this very bonkers car. Right, stick around, back in a sec, and we will talk about some more electric stuff happening in Tesla world with their Dyna. Stick around, back in a mo. Right, maybe you heard or saw an advert or two. Maybe you didn't, lucky you. But if you did and you'd like to strip the adverts out, you can do that with a Patreon page. And it's patreon.com/EVNewsDaily. And you can support the show that way. A little link in your dashboard, RSS feed, which you copy-paste into your podcast app, and then you get the adverts stripped out. Now, let's talk FedEx and FedEx Express in Spain, adding EV vans into their fleet. 33 new Mercedes-Benz e-Sprinters now in Spanish operation between Madrid and Barcelona. Each location equipped with 33 charging points powered by renewable energy, featuring power management for overnight charging of the fleet. That's the way these vehicles work. The move in Spain, part of a broader European initiative at FedEx to electrify their European fleets. There's 23 e-Sprinters in London. They've added them to Amsterdam, Netherlands, Paris, and France is getting them as well. Now, Tesla is continuing the construction of their supercharger station, which has a diner and drive-in theatre as well. One of these things that Elon Musk announced on Twitter years ago, and we just sort of assigned it into the trash bin of just stuff he says which never happens. This one is being built though, and it looks really, really cool. It's a movie screen, two movie screens actually, either side of the diner, which we think will show either movies or clips or just something to go and watch while you have your burger and charge up. It's in West Santa Monica Boulevard, and it's going to feature two screens, and the recent construction pictures we've seen on Reddit over the weekend show the progress really coming along. The deck level, it looks like it's complete. It's got 32 charging stalls going in, and this is just cool. Like, they don't need to do this, but we love stuff like this because it's just a thing that they can do that looks really, really cool. And wouldn't you want to go and charge here almost as a tourist destination rather than sort of I must charge here? Like, you'd go and seek it out. They could even charge more for the electricity. I'm sure they won't. But hey, they'll make some money on burgers and chips, so that's cool. Right, let's talk about how the South Korean leading EV battery makers are presenting their latest advancements and ideas for the future at InterBattery 2024. It's the battery fair in Seoul, aiming to boost the global marketplace for their products and fight back, really, against the Chinese battery makers, which have stolen a march. It'll feature 580 companies from 18 countries at the fair. LG, for instance, the third largest EV battery maker in the world, introducing their new cell-to-pack technology. So rather than making cells into modules, modules into packs, then you just put the cells directly into and integrate them into the vehicles. Better energy density, lower weight, better cost. The cell-to-pack design for pouch cell batteries by LG promises better stiffness to the vehicles as well, and better stability, and just better cell efficiency. LG also plans to showcase their system for managing the entire life cycle of batteries, including the BMS, safety diagnostics, cloud services, and things like that. SK On, their competitor, ranked fifth, I think, globally, in terms of battery EV battery makers, presenting their new fast-charging batteries and lithium-ion phosphate models. Now, the South Korean battery makers have been a little bit behind the curve on the LFP chemistry, lithium iron phosphate, particularly paying attention to colder climates as well. An advanced version of their super fast battery, they say they're going to unveil to get to 80% in 18 minutes. Now, let's talk trucking. And Mack Trucks, a company with a big heritage back to 1900 in Brooklyn, New York, is moving to electric, because everybody is, and their iconic 18-wheelers going electric. And they're also rolling out their electric garbage trucks. So far, 35 of these all-electric garbage trucks have been delivered to various US cities as they get adopted. Now, under the Volvo Group, with headquarters in Greensboro, North Carolina, Mack experienced a big increase in battery electric orders. Just 44 of them delivered in 2022, 124 delivered last year, and a big growth this year as well. In terms of heavy-duty electric truck deployments, back in 2020, there was only 80 of them deployed in the US. Now 13,000 of them got deployed last calendar year. The higher initial cost of the EV trucks is higher compared to combustion, but you make that back really quickly on total cost of ownership. So fleet owners and operators know it's just a no-brainer to go electric. Well, Volvo recently acquired Proterra, the bankrupt battery and electric bus manufacturer, for $210 million. Back to Mack, they've got 420 dealerships in the US, and they say their dealerships are going to be crucial in the adoption of EV commercial vehicles. More price cuts in China. BYD decreasing the starting price of their Yuan Plus, a very, very popular electric SUV, down by 12%. It now costs equivalent about $16,500. The Yuan Plus, first sold back in February 2022, was BYD's first foray into the all-electric SUV market on their e-platform 3, and internationally known as the Atto 3 in some places. Battery capacity remains unchanged. Base model starts at 50 kilowatt hours. Bigger battery, 60.5 kilowatt hours. 150 kilowatt motor in these, and it's a great vehicle, and just getting cheaper. 16 grand equivalent. I know you can't really do it because of taxes and things like that, conversions, but we do our best. About 3 million EVs were sold by BYD last year, but half of those or so were plug-in hybrids. Target this year, 4 million EVs, with 2 million battery electric vehicles their target, because they exceeded Tesla's Q4 numbers. We'll see over the next quarter and the next year whether Tesla retake the crown or whether, you know, BYD stay the world's biggest EV maker. And Leap Motor, another Chinese company, Leap Motor, reducing the price of their SUV, the C10, by 20% over the weekend to capture a bigger proportion of that middle-income consumer that's out there. That's now $18,000 equivalent, and that is for, again, a vehicle that is sort of directly competing with the likes of Li Auto's L6. That's an SUV competing with Tesla in the Chinese market, as all of these car makers are aggressively going after price reductions, a really key point. Now, S-Volt is the battery maker that started mass production over the weekend at their facility in Thailand, with an annual capacity of 60,000 modules and packs. Batteries produced there include the likes of Great Wall Motors' Aura brand. They make lithium iron phosphate cells, and the pack's about 60 kilowatt hours. Now, I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast about the Nissan Leaf losing its remote access for the older cars in the UK. And it is an interesting thing, isn't it, to think about with EVs. As technology becomes a little more like mobile phone technology or computer, you know, technology, it's always the case, isn't it? You know, you buy a new PC or a laptop, and the minute you've got it, you think, oh, this is kind of outdated. I wish I'd got, you know, the brand new one 5 minutes later. Is the same thing happening with EVs? And if so, where does it leave new buyers? Where does it leave buyers of used electric cars? Well, experts predict that smart features, the latest technology, are crucial for EV manufacturers to stand out. And that's more the case in China than anywhere else. Now, 40% of new vehicles sold this year are expected to be what China calls NEVs, new energy vehicles. NEV sales in China was 9.49 million units last year. It was 31% of new car sales, according to the China Association of Automobile Manufacturers. It's going to be 40% this year. And that rise has coincided with the simplification of vehicle production, intensifying competition amongst manufacturers, and how the differentiation is increasingly smart features, and how some of the Western car makers, with Tesla excluded perhaps, but the Germans as well, they've always done really well in China with sort of middle class and those sort of aspirational buyers, are losing out, because what the Chinese consumers want is a growing preference for smart features. Now, the German cars are really well made. They're well engineered and they're, you know, good brands, aspirational brands. But actually what the buyers want are these smart features that come through the production and the testing very quickly. And in China, that's what the startups have embraced. And that's actually what the buyers want. And it's all coincided with that time. And we go back to that first story of the podcast of the Leaf being obsolete. And you think, well, actually, an eight-year-old car, an eight-year-old computer, an eight-year-old phone is largely obsolete. Now, that's ridiculous that we can't drive eight-year-old cars. And of course, the Leafs can be driven. You can get in them, you can preheat them, go back inside your house, but just the app that's not working. And of course, I'm sure Nissan, if they wanted to, could do something with a recall, put, you know, 4G chips inside. It'd be expensive, and they don't need to do that for older buyers. But it's an interesting discussion, isn't it? How the Chinese EV makers are outpacing their global competitors by revolutionising this traditional process of cars. NIO, for instance, can bring a new car to market in 36 months. Zeekr, which is part of Geely, say they can bring a new car in 24 months, offering a variety of models that share digital and different platforms with other Geely brands. That's less than half the time that it's traditionally taken a new model to reach the market. And there's a quicker turnover of models with, in China, the domestic EVs average a 1.3-year market life before updates or new versions are released. Outside of China, it's not 1.3 years, it's 4.2 years is the average cycle life of foreign brands. And it's one of the reasons why the China strategy of rapid model updates and exports is threatening to outpace the traditional automakers. Chinese firms leveraging things like software simulations and embracing this kind of minimal viable product idea of what can we get to the market now quickly that we'll do, and then we'll make it better over the air updates and things like that. Now, the whole car industry is going through this big shift towards standardization across models to reduce development time. XPeng are doing this. They can take 20% off their development time in R&D by making things very standard. We've seen Tesla do it, this drive towards efficiency. And it's fascinating to watch and be part of it and see where it all plays out compared to the Chinese versus the Western automakers and how that'll shake out and what different buyers want in different parts of the world. Something to think about. And if you've got any thoughts, love to hear your thoughts, as always, in terms of, you know, comments. And you can email the show, hello@evnewsdaily.com, or on social. Try and stay on top of it. Oh, and of course, on the Patreon page, you can put comments on the Patreon shows as well. Thanks, as always, to our premium partners, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, National Car Charging on the US mainland, and Aloha Charge in Hawaii, Derek Riley from Nevo.ie and the Nevo EV Review Island YouTube channel, Octopus Electroverse, Global Public Charging, made simple with one app and one map, and Lease Plan Electric Moments, providing all the tools and guidance EV drivers need. Have a good one tomorrow, and remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.